Shea legit is one of the world's most popular superfoods. It's loaded with over 40 trace minerals, fulvic and humic acids, antioxidants, and more. It's a resin or tar-like substance that seeps out of the rocks of the Himalayas at extremely high altitudes, formed from centuries worth of decomposing plant matter and microbial activity, distilled by pure rainwater and pressurized by tons of mountainous rock. In a way, you could say it's kind of like the lifeblood of the earth itself, and we can use it to enhance our daily lives by absorbing its power into our body cells. However, if you've tried Shea legit in the past, you know it's true when I say it does not taste good, and that almost seems like an understatement. Some people say it's like licking an old used ashtray, and some people get a little more descriptive than that. Let your imagination run wild. It's pretty bad. But one thing is for certain. I've tried tons of Shea legit products, and no one has ever been able to cover the flavor, let alone make it taste good, until now. My friends at Organifi just released these new Shea legit gummies, and they actually taste good. They deliver 250 milligrams per serving of pure Himalayan Shea legit. Shea legit's benefits include supporting energy production, healthy hormone levels, performance and recovery, promoting collagen synthesis and heart health, increasing cellular energy, and decreasing fatigue. Shea legit has become super trendy in the superfoods and holistic health world for obvious reasons, and people have long been desperate for a solution to the flavor problem. That's why in the few months since Organifi released these, they've already sold out several times. Visit Organifi.com/TWF. That's Organifi.com/TWF, or just head to the show notes. Take a look at their whole collection, and when you go to check out, use promo code TWF. That code is going to give you a 20% discount on all of their products, and they have a lot of amazing products other than their Shea legit gummies. Find out how these superfoods can help you on your health journey today with Organifi. Emma Dunwoody is a human design expert, master coach, behavioral specialist, and host of the world's number one human design podcast. She wakes people up to the power within them using her unique method of transformational human design, a system of self-knowledge and guidance unlike anything else that exists. Her vision is to take human design mainstream so it becomes more widely accepted than any other global profiling, behavioral, or healing system. She believes it will transform personal development, education, and business forever. Emma wants to inspire everyone to unlock their inner wisdom, take their power back, and feel deeply confident in the decisions they make. This will create a population that values themselves and courageously lives their truth, which will deliver us to a new paradigm of peace, joy, and abundance. That sounds awesome.
Thanks.
That sounds really great. And if everyone has a reading like I just had with you, I could totally imagine that all the things you're wanting to come true will come true, because yeah. I've done human design readings before, and I got to give a shout out to one of my really good friends, Eurosimos, because he is awesome. It's in his name, Eurosimos. And he is the one who tipped me off to human design. And then when you guys reached out about being on my show, I was like, absolutely, this will be incredible. So, I don't know how many times I laughed and nodded during the reading that I just did with you, but it was a lot. And it's because everything that you said resonated so deeply. And that can sound somewhat cliche, like the term, oh, that resonates, especially in our circles, but it really did. It resonated so deeply with everything happening in my life, everything that I feel that I need to move to, how I behave, and validated so many things that I need to change, that I've been feeling that I need to change about myself, or just the way that I approach life to come back into alignment with myself rather. I guess the best place to start is, how did you become interested in human design?
Yeah. So I was, when I actually first got introduced to human design, I was like, oh no. Like the language was really negative. And at the time, I was so science-based. You know, I used a lot of profiling and behavioral tools as a, you know, performance coach and executive coach. And every time I run my chart, I'd be like, oh, I don't want to hear that. You know, like it's true, but I don't want to hear it because I just had this, you know, very preconceived idea that this was trying to tell me who I am. Mm-hmm. And what actually happened in my business, so I was working, I had a corporate business, working with executives, C-level teams, all of the sort of thing. And we were always working towards performance, like how they can do better, how they can lead better, how they can be better, you know, happier within themselves. And when human design came into my life, I did not want to accept it, except I'd made a promise to the universe that if, because I knew that there was something missing, even though my business was successful and, you know, I'd completely transformed my life. I'd healed mental health, you know, from depression and panic disorder. I had given up a very successful advertising career that was, you know, destroying me. I'd retrained, I'd become a master coach. So many things had shifted in my life. And there was this, I almost like was annoyed at the universe. I'm like, I've done all the things all the people tell me to do, and I still have this hole within me. And when I said to the universe, like, you need to hit me over the head, you need to be so clear about what this missing piece is. And then if you do that, I promise I'll do it. And I'd actually been in Spain walking the Camino. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's an 800 kilometer walk or 500 miles. You start at the bottom of France, you walk up and over the Pyrenees Mountains and then along the top of Spain. Wow. And it's a spiritual pilgrimage.
Oh, incredible.
And I'd specifically done it to find my purpose. Like that was my big intention. And on my way home on the plane, I'm like, come on, universe. Like I've almost got it, but you've got to give me something else. And when I arrived home, within the 48 hours of arriving home, everyone started asking me about human design. Now, this is back in 2018 when no one's even heard of it. Like it's not a thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, I feel like I will follow the breadcrumbs. And then I Googled, you know, best human design person in Australia or something along those lines. And there was one other human design person in Australia. And she happened to live one suburb over from me.
Wow.
And she was about to move. And so we spent basically 2 weeks together just talking all things human design. And at that point, knowing what I knew about human behavior, about the brain, about, you know, how much power that lay within us, I sat with this woman who did not know me at all and basically told me everything that I felt on the inside. She put words to it. And I'm like, okay, I will do this thing, universe. I promise I will integrate this into my business. At the time, I had a podcast, can't even remember what the name of it was. And I'm a manifesting generator, which means I can only act in response. You know, I'm going through this process. I'm like, I'm going to integrate human design, going to change the name of my podcast to the Human Design Podcast because I got an insight, you know. And as we talked about before, my core talent is insights. It's a large part of who I am. But I can't act on it. The next day, a mentor calls me that I'd introduced to human design and he says, Emmy, you have to do a podcast on this because there isn't one out there that's any good. And I'm like, oh my goodness. So at this stage, I almost feel like I'm being dragged along like by the universe and I'm saying to my CEOs, so do you think you could give me your birth time? And like I would be rocking in my chair before the call thinking, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. I've made the commitment.
Right, so like these business executives exactly. That are going to say, this is woo-woo, what is this nonsense?
Exactly.
Like, why do you know my birth time? Trying to do identity theft on me?
Exactly, like properly, like and I was freaking out that they would just think I was weird.
Right.
And obviously, because we'd already built this trust, they're like, yeah, sure, here's my details. What do you need it for? And I told them about human design and I'm like, okay, well, we're going to start integrating your design. And all of a sudden what happened was these people completely transformed the way they would lead, the way they were in relationships. They focused on things that were innately their talents and they were already getting good results, but their results completely shifted. And on the other side of my business, I've changed the name of my podcast, even though my ego was like, you can't, you don't know enough, who are you? And I'm like, well, I'm doing this experiment, ego, like I have to do it. I'm just going to do it. My body says I have energy for it. And it just takes off. And I'm like, okay, well, I just have to continue running this experiment. So I just kept running the experiment. And, you know, after over the last, well, since 2018, like, we've built a huge successful business. I don't feel like I work at all. I get to be 100% me every day. I have an incredible team. Like, I don't feel like I run a team. It's just a group of humans that I love, like family, that are on mission together. And human design is the piece that's brought all of that together.
Wow. Incredible. So this will sound like a basic question. I'm sure many of the people watching or listening to this are already familiar with human design to some degree, but let's just start at the basics for those who are not. What is human design? Mm.
So human design is actually Western astrology, the Hindu chakra system, the Kabbalah tree of life, and the Chinese I Ching, all mathematically mapped together. And when you map them together, you get what we call the human design chart or the body graph. And what it's representing is your energetic blueprint. So it's the blueprint that you were born into the world. Like, from the moment you were born and 3 months before you were born, when the soul entered the body, it's like, I like to think of it as, it's your personal treasure map. Now, you're the treasure, so you get to choose how you express that energy, but your human design is going to show you everything that lies within you.
Wow, incredible. And quick question on that, the soul coming into the body 3 months prior to birth, where does that come from in this
system? Well, that was just part of the download. So. Okay.
So that leads to the second question, yeah. Is where did human design come from? How is it developed?
Yeah. So it's really new. So in 1988, there was this guy who was formerly Robert Allen Krakauer, now known as Ra Uruhu. He was a burnt out, in the middle of a divorce, life in the toilet, advertising executive that went to Ibiza. Because, like, everything else was burning down around him. And he was in Ibiza doing the things that you do in Ibiza, and all of a sudden he hears this voice. And for 8 days he channels all of this information. And the thing that I find crazy, and to any of the people who think, oh, that sounds a bit out there, I'm like, there is no way the human brain could map these four ancient wisdoms mathematically together in 8 days. Doesn't right. matter what you're on, that is not going to happen, right? So the voice literally told him how to put all of this information together, how to create the chart, what everything meant. And then he was just taking down all of this information, and that's pretty much how it was birthed into the world.
Did he have any, like, inkling or tendency to look into anything like astrology or the I Ching or Kabbalah before?
Yeah, no. So that's one of the other things that's really interesting about him, is like he wasn't really spiritual. He wasn't really anything. You know, he wasn't really into any of this stuff. It was very much the beginning of his spiritual awakening, in the download, in that eight days.
So he just wrote down the entire system in that 8 days channeling. Did he ever indicate who or what he was channeling? Because obviously, for me, at least, I'll say, I won't say for everyone, I recognize channeling as a legitimate phenomenon, but there's always a hesitation that comes up in me and in other people justifiably. Is like, I don't doubt the phenomenon, but what is being channeled? Like, how do we know this is benevolent? Now, I want to preface this by saying, or add more context, that everything that you just said about me based on my human design chart was not like, whoa, that sounds dark and mysterious or something bad. It just revealed things to me that I already knew to be true about myself. And that's what I said to you. For me, I know when something is true, when it feels like I'm remembering it rather than I'm being told it. And this just sounds like things articulated to me in a way that I'd already known deep down that I had never been able to articulate or piece together in my mind myself. So with that being said, what did he channel, or who did he channel? Was it just the information?
So it was this, he called it the voice.
The voice.
You know, the voice. And the voice, in all reports, like, he was really dramatic, and we look back at it from a human design perspective, and like his main energy was this gate of shock, you know. And I believe that it had to be shocking because otherwise it wouldn't have broken through the way it's broken through. But ultimately it was just the voice, and the voice was not very kind. And this is an experience that he goes into a lot of depth about how this whole experience was very harrowing for him, but he just did it anyway, you know. I mean, how couldn't you? You know, it's like, all right, I'm just going to give it a shot and see right. what happens.
Especially something so out of left field based on where he was in his life, and totally makes sense. And so how is Human Design different from astrology or numerology or some of these other systems?
So in my opinion, I think the biggest difference is the specificity, okay? So my background is personality and behavioral profiling tools, you know, the Enneagram, Myers-Briggs, DISC profiling, and they bring a level of specificity that even I, in my opinion, astrology doesn't bring or numerology doesn't bring. Human Design brings this level of specificity that is mind-blowing. Like, it literally will say, okay, your core talent falls into this theme. And, you know, when I first heard my core talent, I'm like, are you kidding me? And there's a quote, because I also, when I talk about the core talent, I just want to make sure that I give credit to Richard Rudd and the Gene Keys, because that's where that comes from. And the Gene Keys works with Human Design. Mm.
It's similar, right, in that it's mapping multiple systems together in a specific way.
So Richard Rudd launched Human Design for Ra in the UK. They worked together. Then at some point Richard Rudd said, look, I can't do this anymore because I've channeled this thing, the Gene Keys. In Human Design, we call them the gates. They're the hexagrams of the I Ching. Just as an aside, the hexagrams of the I Ching have now also been mapped back to our genetic codon. It's like the hexagrams are in us. And so Richard Rudd then went and did the Gene Keys. Now, the Gene Keys, the best explanation I've ever heard is actually my mentor that I trained with here in Australia interviewing Richard Rudd, Kim Gould. They were talking about it, and Human Design is like the skeleton. It's like the masculine. It's the structure. The Gene Keys is the feminine. It's the muscles. It's everything that goes on top and really brings it to life. So they work beautifully, beautifully together. But yeah, the difference and why I think Human Design is so powerful is its specificity. The other thing that I think the most important thing about Human Design for me is that it's putting you back in the authority seat. Mm. It's actually teaching you that what you feel on the inside, or what your internal authority, we call it in Human Design, but your internal guidance system says, it teaches you how to trust you and stop giving your power away to everybody else and the conditioning in your subconscious mind.
That resonates so much, because even when we did my reading outside this room, and it was like a 45-minute to an hour reading, so it was really in-depth, there were multiple moments where I was like, man, I should have trusted my own intuition on that. Man, I should have trusted my own intuition on that. Oh, I've already known that, where, especially because I'm undefined here based on the Human Design chart, other people's ideas and concepts were getting in my head, and I'm a splenic authority, which means I have that initial like gut instinct, if you will. And I've, in countless examples, gone against it and known that I shouldn't have. And this just revealed to me more about myself. And it really does seem to put you back in the driver's seat as the author of your own story, your own authority. And yeah, it really resonates very deeply with me. So I think from here, I'd like to get into the basics of the different types in Human Design. And so all that's required is your birthplace, birth time, birth date, and name.
Yep.
Right.
That's it. You don't even technically need your name.
Okay. Just those three things.
Yeah. Right? As long as you need an accurate time of birth.
Do you ever play around with celebrities, by the way, and just like look
all
up
the
their
time.
Stuff and like, oh,
my
that
God.
Makes sense.
Like, we just spent a week or 4 days with Greg Braden.
Yeah.
And we're like, it's got to be, because, and he actually talks about his birthday. So we had his birthday. We just didn't have the time. And we ran it all through. And I'm like, oh, like just listening to the language, because I'm, you know, I've been doing this for years. I'm good at this. And I'm like, oh, I just know. And I just know that he is absolutely a 3-5 generator. I just know it. Cross of cycles. Because you can hear it in people's language, but all the time. Like, because, and then you can see, it makes so much sense why people make decisions the way they make decisions. You know, one celebrity I talk a lot about is Taylor Swift, because often when people in human design talk about projectors, they talk about these people that have no energy and they can't do anything. And I cannot stand anything disempowering. You know, like, people need to take responsibility for what comes out of their mouth because it's programming someone effectively, right?
100%.
And I love to look at her because Taylor Swift is like, she's broken old systems. She's created new systems. You know, her core talent actually sits in the six, which is the gate of conflict. All of her songs are breakup songs. They're all about conflict. Like, literally, this is what she's on the planet to do. So, yeah, I'm always, always curious about people's design.
So when you get someone's birth date, birth time, and birthplace, you input that in, and then it gives you this chart. And correct me if I'm wrong, the main ones are, or the different types that you can be are projector, manifestor, generator, manifesting generator, and then reflector.
That's it.
Yep. Right. Okay. So let's go one by one on each. What are projectors in general?
Yep.
Obviously, you're not going to have someone's chart in front of you here, but what are projectors known to be?
Yeah, cool. So a projector, they are actually, from a human design perspective, we talk about them almost like our new humans. They're the ones that don't fit into the construct that most of us are used to, because they're about 14% of the global population, and they're here to guide us. Their wisdom is what everyone else needs and wants. They're here to be seen and acknowledged. Now, the challenge is they have to wait for an invitation. Now, that doesn't mean they sit around on their hands and wait to be seen. That's not what I'm saying at all. But what they need to do is let themselves be obsessed with the thing they're obsessed with. Go and learn. Go and dive deep, because they're here to, you know, I often use the example of to be Yoda on the cushion that people come to and ask for guidance. But unless they have the energy to do that, then often the invitations won't come. So projectors are here to guide. They're really good at seeing efficiencies. Like, how can they better a system? They can see really deeply into the other. So one-on-one, often projectors will be like, well, you're doing a little bit too much of this, a little more of that. And they can really help people tweak their energy or their system beautifully. The challenge for projectors is that they do not have consistent energy. So they have to kind of create a life where they can do what they love when the invitations come in. And then the rest of the time, they're either learning what they love to learn, or they're recharging their batteries, or whatever it is.
Could that also be that they don't have consistent inspiration, and they like need to wait for inspiration to come, and that sort of coincides with the energy?
Yeah, look, it can. Like, the inspiration piece is going to be in your deeper than the type. So for you, you've got an undefined head center. Mm-hmm. So the inspiration, like, literally you're waiting for it to just wash through, like whether it's someone's aura or whether it's something happening in the transit.
Conversation, like, that I have.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's also a part of waiting, but that's more because of you're waiting for that undefined center to be lit up, or that thing to be dropped in.
Got it. Okay. And so what are some of the shadow sides of a projector, generally speaking, aside from the sporadic energy?
Yeah. So in human design, one of the things that I think is most important about type is it's going to give us two things. Number one is our not self theme. The other thing is our signature theme. And it's one of the cool things to look at is our not self is when we're out of alignment and we're operating from the mind, from conditioning, from the ego. And our signature theme is when we're operating in alignment, listening to our authority, operating from our strategy. And a projector's strategy is to wait for the invitation. So for projectors, it's all about bitterness. Like, if bitterness is showing up in your life, I mean, again, just going to Taylor Swift, like, she puts all of her bitterness into her creativity. She then, you know, writes songs about all of these things that she's experienced, and she deals with it, you know? But oftentimes the bitterness that will then show up in when a projector is not seen and acknowledged, or their wisdom is not seen and acknowledged, then they're going to get bitter. They're going to get bitter at the people that don't see them, or they feel rejected and feel bitter. So really looking for that bitterness is just a sign that you're operating from fear, from the mind, from the ego. And the counter side to that is this success piece. You're looking for a feeling of success within you, whether that's helping someone else succeed or you succeed. And I would also say, and this is for everybody, but really even more so for projectors, please redefine what success means to you. Because you guys are not designed to succeed in that old school, you know, hustle, take massive action, do all the things. So what does success feel like to you in the first place? And then you're going to know that feeling in the body when you are in alignment.
Makes sense, because my version of success is when I have ample time just to be creative and explore a topic that I'm currently obsessed with, which sounds exactly like what you've described as a projector. And that's why I laugh so much when we're out there. I'm like, that is literally defining me down to specific details. Okay, let's move on to a manifester.
Yep.
Now.
Okay. So,
and you said real quick, just to reiterate, projectors are relatively new on the earth, right?
Yeah.
And have you heard of the theory that projectors are all supposed to find each other?
No, I haven't heard about that theory. Okay. And it's interesting, like, I don't know, I have no expertise in that area. But one of the things that I'm really big on is not separating out the types. Like, we are all very much designed to work together.
Makes sense.
You know, like, I'm a manifesting generator. You know, a large part of being a manifesting generator is to demonstrate human potential. But I make a hell of a mess doing it. So having a projector in my world that can be like, just do less of that and more of that, like, then my potential becomes greater. So it's so important that we all work together. However, there could be some theory with validity. I don't know. Like, it's not my area of expertise. Manifestors. So, of course, Ra was a manifester, like, perfect example of a manifester. They are here to bring something new, to be the trailblazers, the creative people. I often use the example because, you know, my first iteration was an advertising executive, was the, you know, the guy that works on a pitch. There was this guy that would work on all the pitches in our office. He'd come in, he'd work through the night, he'd just, it, like, when his creative juices were flowing, he was there, he was doing it. He'd do the pitch, and then he would literally bugger off skiing for 2 weeks, or he would just leave. And that's this manifest energy. So it's inconsistent as well. And it's all about that creative urge from source moving through them. And what they're doing is they're inspiring people into action. Mm. So they start things, but they don't go on and build them. So they're also, in the old language, again, I don't love this language, but it's a great way to explain it, is that they can be a little bit polarizing. Mm. What does that mean? It means that not all manifestors are going to be liked, and it's very deliberate because they are on the planet to inspire very specific people. Now, that manifestor doesn't know who they are, but they have to be authentically themselves and follow their creative urges. And when they do that, then all of a sudden a bunch of people are going to get inspired into action and the building will begin. So they have to be very unapologetically themselves. Their strategy is to initiate. So they're the only ones that can actually go out and initiate, like, take that first piece of action, and to inform. So it's really important if you are a manifester or a manifesting generator that you inform. That means you're declaring the direction of your energy. Mm. It's not asking for permission. Nope. It's just saying, I'm going here, I'm doing that, I'm running up the street, I'm working on this thing. Because what actually happens is people will tend to leave you alone and let you do what you want to do. You know, being a manifester child is really hard because they've got this. You know, like, I've got two MG children, so the manifesting generators have a lot of manifester in them. And as a parent to manifesting generators, not manifestors, like, I just have to back off. Like, they really do have a lot more, like, they know what's good, what's bad, and anything that they get wrong, not that you can get anything wrong, they can also fix. So being a manifester kid can be quite challenging. Now, their not self theme is anger. So they're the ones that either, you know, oftentimes they're the ones that push down the anger. They don't want to express it because they don't want to upset anyone, but they're actually designed to upset people, you know, some people and not other people. And then their alignment, their signature is peace. So a manifester is always looking to create peace in their life, in their mind, in their relationships. That is their primary driver.
Okay, got it. And then for I have a question on that real mm-hmm. quick. So because manifestors are more of the ones that are, let's say, assertive and pretty sure of what they're doing, they're supposed to announce the world what they're doing. Is it oftentimes that projectors work with manifestors pretty well. I'm not saying that projectors don't work with other ones well, but because projectors have to wait for the invitation and then manifestors seem to be the ones who are doing the declaring, thus inviting, that might be a good like compatibility.
Yeah. So that dynamic could be really challenging because one of the things about a manifestor is you cannot tell them what to do. So I've had a number of clients, like, because I work one-on-one with clients, I, you know, have run a whole community. But if I have a manifestor client, I never tell them what to do. You cannot tell them what to do. And if you are telling a manifestor client what to do or a manifestor what to do and they're doing it, then they are so shut down because they're not designed to be told what to do. Now, what are projectors here to do? Literally here to tell us what to do, how to do things better. So that dynamic, if it's out of alignment, it doesn't work. If it's in alignment, then it's magical. You know, projectors work brilliantly with generators and manifesting generators because they're the ones here building the world and they will quite often invite in the projector energy because they're like, well, you can help me do it better, faster, bigger. Whereas that dynamic, if they're both in alignment, it could be super powerful with a manifestor and the projector. But if they're not in alignment, it could be really like
so it's a big
bang.
If. It's a big if.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so let's move on to generator now.
Yep. So generators and manifesting generators, they are technically one type, but the manifesting generator is a hybrid between the generator and the manifestor. So it takes on traits from both. And together, they make up 70% of the global population.
Okay, so together for manifesting generators and generators,
correct.
They do? What percentage, again, sorry, I skipped over that, was manifestors?
So they're about 10% of the global population.
Okay, so even more rare than projectors.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. So generators are all about, they have like a very big and enveloping aura. What does that mean? Well, when you're around a generator, you want to be around a generator, unless they're in frustration, which is their not self theme. Like you just find them kind of attractive. Like, I want to learn more. You're like, what are you talking about? It just feels comfortable in here. And these are the people that are all about being lit up and excited. They're actually the ones that are creating the life force energy of the planet. So they do that through the work that they do. So in the past, the big challenge is that these people with this energy have been the ones that have been forced to do the jobs, like forced to work hard, you know, 9-to-5 jobs, forced to work in the factories, forced to do all of these things. But what human design brings to the table is that if you really want these humans to build, then they need to be lit up. That means that the energy in their body, their sacral center says, yes, I have energy for this. And when they do, they can, you know, build great things. So a lot of the people out there that will, you know, do a lot of the doing are these the generator types.
And they feel called to. They don't feel burnt by
doing. No, called to. You know, being a manifesting generator myself, like I can't help it. And one of the challenges I had, and I hear this a lot, one of the challenges I had when I had my kids was I felt so guilty because I wanted to work. You know, once I had my second son, 3 months after he was born, I started my first business. And, you know, I genuinely believe I became a better mother at that moment because I was actually fulfilling this part of me because all generators and manifesting generators want to do the work that lights them up. You know, with the manifestors, they only want to work when the creativity is moving through them. Projectors only want to work when their wisdom's being seen and acknowledged. Reflectors, you know, they kind of move in and out, depends on who they're around and the work that that feels good at the time. But for us, like it's so programmed within us. So we want to do it. But the challenge for generators and manifesting generators is that we do this thing called functional burnout. So it looks like we're fine because we can still turn up and do the thing. For you, when you're not fine, when you're burnt out, everybody knows about it because you're like flat out on your back, right? But for us, we just keep turning up and keep turning up and keep turning up and we don't realize, but we've completely lost our passion, our lust for life. You know, that energy that is intrinsically generated energy, it's gone because we're not listening to the sacral anymore. So we live in a world of frustration. So for generators, their not self theme is frustration. And their signature theme is, why has it popped out of my head? Satisfaction. So one of the big things about this satisfaction piece is often, I remember back in the ad days, I would drive home from, let's say, a quarterly review. So this is something I've worked on. It's reporting what we've done for the last quarter. I've worked hard on the presentation. I've done the presentation. And I remember having this amazing feeling. I'd be driving home and just feeling like, well, that was a job well done. And that's the satisfaction. Like, we feel the satisfaction when we are in alignment, when we're doing the things that light us up, and we get to the end of it and go, that just feels great. So that frustration and satisfaction are your indicators if you're a generator and a manifesting generator. Is there anything else I need? Nope. So
no.
Do you want me to move on to the manifesting generator?
Yeah, because it's interesting because you're a manifesting generator and you're drawing a lot of parallels to generators. So I'd love to hear the parallels for manifesting generators to manifestors now too.
Yeah. So the manifesting generator is a hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a generator because it's got a defined sacral, but it's a manifester because it's got a motor connected to the throat, which are the two things that define those types. And so they bring in a lot of both of the types. With manifestors, though, they're the only ones that can initiate. Generators and manifesting generators are always in response. So you could have an idea, you can have an insight, you can have intuition, all of those things, but don't act on it until something shows up in your external reality. You know, the story I always tell is about changing the name of my podcast. I had an insight straight away that I should do it, but the next day someone literally said to me, you should change the name of your podcast, you should do this. And my whole body, except for my ego, was like, yes, I've got energy for this. Now, the manifesting generator has to be in response. It can't initiate. But where the differences start to happen is with an MG, when they walk into the room, like a manifester, it's a really big energy. So people know they're there. The presence is very manifester presence. Mm. But manifesting generators are these non-linear beings. So what that means is they're the multi-passionate ones. They're the ones that have 15 books on their bedside table and they're all half read. And most, you know, manifesting generators are feeling really bad about that. But we actually learn faster. We get into things quicker. We get out quicker. We miss steps. You know, after I walked 800 kilometers, all of these people, they go and they get this certificate to say that they'd done it. And I'm like, oh, I don't need that, you know, because as a manifesting generator, I just didn't need that. That's not the piece I needed. So we have the creativity of the manifester. We have the energetic independence because a manifester has this real energetic independence. We have that of the manifester. But most of us is generator because our sacral is this primary thing that's always telling us, yes, you have energy for this or no, you don't, which is the primary driver for a generator and a manifesting generator.
What's the not self theme of a manifesting generator?
So the not self theme is anger and frustration.
So it's both.
Mm.
Ah, okay.
They get both. And like for me, I would say one of my highest values is peace. So it was fascinating as I started to learn human design, and it's all over my chart, you know, like it's in specific gates. It's, you know, one of the drivers of how I make my decisions. So yeah. And then the other side to that is they have satisfaction and they also have peace. So frustration and anger and then
self theme is peace and satisfaction. Not self theme is frustration and anger.
Correct.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. And is it that depending on the constitution of that specific individual, is it going to be more tailored towards peace versus satisfaction, or is it kind of split between both?
That's a really good question. And my gut tells me that it'll depend on the configuration. So some of us, and this is way too detailed, but some of us, our energy goes from the motor to the throat through other centers. And then some of us have a motor that connects directly to the throat. So the ones that have a motor directly to the throat, they will tend to lean more into the manifestor energy. Like I have like that, and I definitely have that, a lot of manifestor energy within me. But that's, yeah, in my experience, if they have that direct connection, then they will tend to be more manifestor.
Got it. Okay. Now let's move on to reflector. And correct me if I'm wrong, this is the rarest type.
Correct.
In human design.
Yeah. So
1%? 1%?
Yeah, 1%. Okay. So the reflectors are fascinating. And what makes them fascinating is that all of us sit in a room or sit with a reflector and we just see ourselves. So most people that teach about reflectors, they just teach like the same three things or what they see in this reflector. So it's just them.
Mm-hmm.
Reflectors are here to show us the truth of who we are. So whether that's an individual relationship or a community or even, you know, a city, like you are going to see reflected in that person the truth because they can't help but take in all of your energy, amplify it,
and
reflect it
back. Are they like almost all?
They are all.
They're completely undefined.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And for, well, we'll get to the undefined part for those who are confused on what that means. But with reflectors, what is their self-theme and then not self-theme?
Yeah. So they're, when they're in alignment, it's all about surprise. So they have this aura that they that we call sampling. So they're sampling things in life. They're constantly like feeling people, places, energies, opportunities, everything's running through them.
That would make sense if they're trying to if they're reflecting back the truth, they have to gain as much information as they can sampling in order to figure out
exactly
the truth across the landscape.
Exactly. Yeah. So well said. In fact, I'm going to take it and I'm going to use that example.
Okay.
And because they have this, the way they see the world, because they're always reflecting back this energy, they can see the potential in everything, right? So they see the world from this place of great potential. Their not self-theme is disappointment. Mm. It's this feeling of unmet potential, you know, that
in themselves or the world?
Well, it's both.
Both. Wow.
Because they're constantly feeling the world within them.
Is it almost like a longing, a desire for things to be better than they are?
Well, I think it's more of a, wow, it could have been better. It could have been done better. There was so much more potential there.
Do you find a lot? Well, I'd imagine you don't find a lot of reflectors as it is, but when the ones that you do find, do you find a lot of them are operating in their not self theme at this point in history?
Yes. I think there are a lot of them that are. And I think because again, the reflectors, they don't fit into our society and into conditioning. Like as kids, they're the ones that constantly changed their mind about who they wanted to be when they grew up or, you know, they're always ebbing and flowing. They are a chameleon depending on who they are with. You know, a reflector, when they get into relationships, they got to be so aware of how that person makes them feel over time because that's how they're going to feel, you know? Or a house, if they buy a house, like, because we call them moon beings, they're a little bit differently made up. So we're all really focused on the sun. They're focused on the moon. It's how the moon moves through their chart that creates their consistency. But like if they're going to buy a house, let's say, they're the people that want to go and look at that house a number of times over a 28-day cycle. They want to like feel how it feels as this energy moves through them. So these are people that need to slow down when making decisions. They just have to allow themselves to be really honest about the experiences, the people, the places, how they make them feel, because that is literally dictating how the consistency that they're going to feel.
I could totally see where for a reflector, it would just be really tough to be in reality, period, or it could be really beautiful based on the environment that you're around, because you're literally just taking up the energetic imprint and the biofields of other people that are around you. So it would behoove of really anyone, but especially reflectors, to be in environments that are loving, kind people, so that they're just amplifying that back.
You know, the reflector coach that I have in my community, she transitioned out of being a primary school teacher. And there was, before she came to Human Design, She was like, I was so good at this. And then I got into the classroom and all of a sudden I felt like I was so bad at it. But she wasn't bad at it at all. It was that she was literally feeling all these little kids, all their emotions, all their fears, all their, you know, everything.
Home trauma, everything.
Exactly, yeah. Everything.
Wow.
And for her, it was too much, you know. And what Human Design gave her was the confidence to set herself free from that because she just couldn't go through this. If she couldn't help every single child and help them to feel better, which she couldn't because she couldn't change the family dynamics, for example, she couldn't change their beliefs or those sort of things, that she just couldn't be in that environment, you know. And that's how reflectors work, you know, like, Because if they're reflecting back this energy, you want to be reflecting back the energy you want more of in the world, not less of in the world.
Right. And so what Emma's talking about here is in human design, you have essentially the chakra system, mm-hmm. right? And then there's a few different parts where it branches off and splits into two separate things in some of the chakras. And you have those centers either defined or undefined, depending on the type that you are, depending on the specifics of your chart. And so with reflectors, they are completely undefined. So with undefined centers, that means you are going to be picking up on the energy of the environment around you as it relates to what goes on in that center, correct?
Yeah. So you're taking in other people's energy, you amplify it in your body, and then you reflect it back.
What's so validating about that, and this, I mean, this applies to everyone, is that you then have insight into, oh, I'm feeling this way, not because of my own inner workings and process. And it may not be exclusive, but for the most part, that's the case. And that's what I found with me as you're going through my chart. I'm like, oh my goodness, that makes so much sense. And I had always thought that again, it like resonates so deeply within me, but it's so helpful, I bet, especially for a reflector, to know that, because they're aware of, oh, this is not mine. And I bet just by becoming aware yep. that it's not theirs, they can manage those situations and move through life more appropriately.
Yeah, 100%. And we do actually find that reflectors tend to be more energetically like Teflon. Like they tend to let other people's energy flow off them much more easily than the other types, especially in their undefined centers, because it's what they're doing all the time. They're just sampling
they
it and letting
to,
it
right?
go. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
At no point that is there that consistent energy, you know?
That makes sense.
But I just want to respond to one thing, you know, that you were saying, like, yeah, in our undefined centers, we are creating an identity from other people's energy. You know, for me, being a behavioral coach, that's all about, you know, our identity is the reality we're creating, right? So for me, understanding human design and putting that all together, that was the big, like, that was mind-blowing for me. You know, I've got an undefined spleen, and the spleen is the house of fear. So for me, I can't sit on an airplane without getting an image of the plane blowing up. And I'm like, I'm not an afraid. Like,
it's literally
I'm,
my wife.
Right?
Yeah, identical.
But it's not me. It's the guy I'm sitting next to. Like, it's not even my energy. So over my life, I have built the muscle. You know, I'm a performance coach. So I know that the important thing to do with fear is I have to face it. Like, I have to feel the fear and do it anyway. So I've built this muscle where I'm constantly stepping outside my fear, constantly facing my fear. And then when human design came along, I was like, oh, thank God, because it's not me. It's actually just that I'm designed to take in other people's fear. And now that I know that, you know, I don't sit and have a panic attack on the plane thinking, oh, my God, am I having some intuitive insight here? Nope, it's just the guy next to me is freaking out and I can just be like, it's okay, mate. You know, just send him some good vibes and just let it go. I'm not creating the belief system in my own subconscious mind.
That's so helpful. I want to talk now about parenting and family members, specifically as it relates to learning about their individual chart. Because I know you also sort of look at group dynamics, and I don't know if you would call it a group chart necessarily.
Penta. We call it a penta.
Group
yeah.
penta. Okay. So I just in your life, you have kids, you have family, you have people that are on your team. How helpful has it been to know their chart specifics?
It's been an absolute game changer. You know, like I was asked yesterday about building my team for the business. We've done it all in alignment. Like a manifestor recommended Taylor, who's my chief operations officer, and she was recommended for a role just to do a couple of hours a week of like, you know, PA stuff. And this manifestor client of mine recommended her. Then when we put our charts together, my mind was attached to this other person because I knew them and I liked them, you know, that classic, you know, hire who you like because the human brain's designed to do that. But I didn't. I hired in alignment with my design. I valued that this person was brought to me by a manifestor. And this person has grown into the COO of my business. Like I couldn't physically do the things that she does in my business. My business wouldn't be as successful as it is if it wasn't for her. And we have grown our entire team that way. One of the things that I talk a lot about is I've broken every business rule there is. I don't do anything the way I was trained to do it. I do everything in alignment with my design. I trust my own inner authority. I value the traits of my team. Mm. So, for example, detail is not one of my superpowers. If you have a line one in your profile or a lot of them in your design, then you're going to be someone who's really into detail. I think I might have one in my entire design. It's not that I can't be detailed, but it doesn't light me up. Yet the people, both Taylor and then our EA, who is incredible, they both have line ones. So when you start to sort of map these things together, the gaps get filled, if you like. And from a parenting perspective, I think it's an absolute game changer. I mean, we have so many teachers in our community that want to also learn to teach their kids in alignment with design. You know, for my kids specifically, I was diagnosed with dyslexia really, really young. Obviously, that bang, that little thing got stuck to my identity. I thought I was stupid. Gratefully, in my late 20s, I discovered that dyslexia, one of the things that goes along with dyslexia is genius. It's just that our brains don't work in the way that the school system works. But it took me many years to get there. So when my eldest son started presenting with the same thing, there was no chance I was ever going to go and get him diagnosed. But what I did do is I said, are you interested? Are you curious to know anything about your human design? He's like, yeah, Mum, I've seen what it's done for you. So I just took him through a few things. And I mean, a lot of this won't make sense, but like, for example, he's a quad right. So what that means is that he doesn't actually fit into the schooling system because his brain and his body doesn't work in a strategic way. Mm. So I said to him, all you got to do is be present. If you practice just being present in the classroom, you're going to smash it. So he stopped trying to take all the notes. He stopped trying to be the person that all the teachers were telling him to be, and he did this instead, and it completely changed everything.
Wow.
You know, we then took him out of there and put him and his brother in a Steiner school, and both of my kids are line fours. Line fours are all about community and relationships. Steiner is all about community and relationship.
I'm a big Steiner guy, so that's awesome.
Right?
Yeah.
Both of my kids have gone from, you know, like okay students to top of the class, because they're thriving in environments that really speak to the truth of who they are instead of telling them they have to, you know, fit into someone else's model. So it's been an absolute – it's such a powerful thing to understand. You know, like we also live in this world where we're constantly sending our kids out to do all the sports and all the extracurricular activities, but your design, like you're lucky. You've got a defined root center, so it's almost like you could keep up, but it's not good for you.
Mm.
Like all of these little projector kids that are being sent out to all these extracurricular activities, like that is not good for them. They need to rest. They need the downtime. So it is such a powerful way that we can improve all relationships, but our parenting and, yeah, really being able to support others the way they're designed to be supported, as opposed to us just projecting what we think is best onto them.
I want to give a plug for this right now, because as we continue to expand, I want to make sure people have somewhat of a context to continue on with. So if you look in the show notes, I believe on Emma's website, you can get a free version, yep, of your own chart, so you can kind of look at some of the things that we're talking about. So let's have you pause here and go download your own chart on Emma's website. You can find that in the show notes, so that as we continue on, you're able to understand what we're talking about. So you're talking about the lines. What
the profiles,
are, yeah,
yep,
the different profiles.
Yeah, okay. So the profile, there's six profile lines. They come from the hexagrams of the I Ching. And just a little background of the I Ching. The I Ching is, it's called the Chinese Book of Changes, and it's the 64 ways that humans can transform.
Is that where the gene king keys,
yes,
get 64?
The gene, yep. So the, okay, gene keys are connected to the hexagrams. So the profiles, and it's a journey, okay? So the line one, it sets the foundation. These are people who they're it's called the investigator. They want to get to the bottom of things. They want all the information. They want all the knowledge. They're the ones that read all the books, watch all the YouTube. They get all the information. So they're creating a safe foundation. They are also the people that others will see as an authority, especially over time as they build this knowledge. Then the line twos, they are the naturally talented. So if the first ones learn through knowledge, the number twos, they learn through their own natural talent. This can be challenging for a line two because the things that come easy for them are the talents they're here to give to the world, and they just don't value them because they come easy. You know, my youngest son, he's a line two, and when we all go surfing as a family, there's like the other three of us are all like just like flailing about. I mean, my eldest son isn't, but my youngest, who hardly ever surfs, any board, any wave, he's up, he's off,
the natural.
Smashes it, right?
Yeah.
And it's because it's just his natural talent. He learned to play the Harry Potter theme with no music, no nothing, just from ear. He just got on a piano, and it was the first thing he taught himself to play.
Wow.
Just worked it out. But the line twos don't value that, so they have to learn to value that. It's also called the hermit because they want to be on their own. These are people that when they have a natural talent, they'll go away and they'll learn it and they'll, you know, work on it. And then what they're going to notice is people project onto them that talent. Like, wow, you're good at that. Can you help me with that? Can you show me how to do that? And as soon as those projections start, then they've got to come out of their cave and share it with the world.
Mm.
Then the line three, this is the experiential learner. All right, this is me. I'm a line three. And the one, two, and three are what we call personal profile lines. So it's about the individual. And the line three learns through trial and error. So it's all about experimentation. It's about two steps forward, one step back. It's a thing I did not like when I first learned about my own design, but it's really true. What we're here to do is call out what doesn't work because we really know what does work because we've tried everything. And it's all about experimentation. You know, we're the alchemists. We're the ones that are kind of really getting to the bottom of of what works and experience. So often a line three will not have any questions until they've had an experience. Once they have that, then they know how to move forward or what to ask about. Then we move into what we call the transpersonal numbers, the four, the five, the six. These are all numbers that are fundamentally about the other. So the four, which is what you are, this is all about community and relationships. Right? Yeah. And the line four is another what we call foundational. So it's the foundation of the upper trigram. The one is the foundation of the lower trigram. What that means is that your stability, your foundations are created from relationships. Like the relationships and the community you have around you are so important for you feeling safe in the world.
You know what's so crazy is that I didn't mention this when we were doing our reading, I should have, is that anytime my wife or another one of my family members becomes fearful as it relates to what's going on in the world, because we are in a chaotic and tumultuous time when it comes to the entire collective, I don't feel afraid legitimately ever, essentially, because of the community that I'm surrounded by of like-minded people. I'm like, I know we'll figure it out. That very much resonates that it's my security net. Yeah. I love the community that I formed. Yeah.
And that's spot on. And you have a defined spleen. You know, so fear for you is like once you face the fear, it's done. You're not going to be feeling everybody else's fear. You know, that's really helpful with the work that you do because you won't kind of be knocked off by other people's fears because all you got to do is face your own.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing about the line four is that all your opportunities are going to come through your network. You know, like everything comes through the people you know. And the four is the opportunist. Then the five, I'm also a five, so I'm a 3-5. The five is the heretic. And we are literally, these are the people that can feel like the savior. It's a savior energy. Our aura walks around and people literally can feel, oh, you can help me. You can save me. You can solve my problem.
Have you had that happen to you before without?
Oh, my God. Like my entire life.
Wow.
My entire life. Like I remember moving
just spontaneously,
all the
randomly.
Time.
Wow.
Like all the time. Every relationship I have, people will be like, oh my God, this bad thing's happening in my life. Can you help me?
They
like,
just dump all over you out of nowhere and just have this feeling that you can help them.
Yeah. It's like we just have this beacon for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the challenges with being a line five is that no one listens to you. No one's there for you when you need them.
Mm.
And I remember being like, I think I was maybe 20 and I moved into a share house with one of my friends. And I remember having this conversation like, oh my God, it's so nice to live in a house with you because she was another person like me. In hindsight, I know she would have been a line five, that we actually listened to each other. We were there for each other. And I remember having this visceral feeling of like, this is what it feels like to have someone support me.
So it's really important for a line five to have another line five in their life that they can bounce stuff off of each other.
So Taylor, my COO, she's a line five. She's a 5-1. So I'm a personal profile and she's a transpersonal profile. So we work really brilliantly together.
Explain briefly again the personal versus trans personal.
Yeah. So if you're a personal profile, you've got the small number first. Technically you're a personal profile. Okay. And that means that it's about your individual journey first and then you take it to the world.
Got it.
So me being a line five, a 3-5, I have all my experiences. Then my line five, a line five wants to do a thing called universalize. They want to have impact. They want to lead. Their power sits within the five. So what they want to do is they want to take everything for me, all my experiences, and I want to take it to the world. Mm. So it's about the other. If you have a transpersonal profile, so let's say with Taylor, for example, a 5-1, she will always be thinking about the other first. Mm. Like how do I help the other first? And then be like, okay, so what information do I need to help them?
And it's not necessarily that, you know, I could see where a tendency creeps up in people to think, oh, it's bad if I'm transpersonal because that means I'm thinking about myself first. But no, that's just how you're constituted and you need to own that.
That's exactly right. You know, like Ra talked a lot about these personal profiles, like they're selfish. And again, I took great umbrage to that at first. And then I was like, oh, crap. Like when you actually look at it, I am selfish because I do what I do. And the moment my process is done, I want to take it to everybody else. So if I'm not selfish, I miss out on my process and I can't do the thing that I've been put on the planet to do, you know, whereas, you know, that transpersonal profile is just going to be more focused on what others need first, and then they're going to go to the self. And both of them have a shadow side, you know, like we're conditioned, especially as women, not to put everyone else before us, right? Mm-hmm. So as a personal profile, it was really hard to prioritize me. You know, as a transpersonal profile, you can be so busy putting all your attention on everyone else and not looking at yourself, you know, and that can get in the way.
And that's really bad for people with transpersonal profiles, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So that's the line five. Then we have the line six, which is you as well. And the line six, and if it's this journey, so the line one, it's laying down foundation. Line two is showing us we have natural talent. The line three is experimenting and having experiential what doesn't work. Line four is building taking all of the 1, 2, 3, taking it to the community. Then the line five is taking all of this, leading and really going large with it. Then the line six reflects on all of that and then creates a new vision for the next iteration.
Got it.
Right?
Wow.
So the line sixes are the role model. So it's very much about you and your journey. It's like who you become over, and I said to you this earlier, like this triphasic thing that the line six do. So you have this 3 phase of life up until 30, lots of trial and error. You feel like a line three. You get up, you fall down, you get up, you fall down. But you're learning a lot. Then you move between 30 and 50. And in this time, in the original language we talk about, you're on the roof. So you'll take a step back. It'll feel like you don't want to be out there as much and you're creating wisdom. It's almost like this constant experimentation, like, well, if I did this and let go of that and what happens if I do this, like building wisdom. And then after 50, you come down off the roof and you become this real role model. Now, you're always going to be a role model, but that's when you really step into it after 50. The one thing I always want to say to line sixes is patience is a very big part of your process. It doesn't mean that you can't succeed in your 20s. You can, but that is never going to be the thing because a line six is always looking for something special. They're the ones that are looking for the soulmate. They're the ones that are looking for something that is exceptional. You mentioned beauty earlier. Like they're always looking for something greater. Mm-hmm. And it's a journey to get there because you're the thing that's the special thing you're looking for, but you have to become that thing before you're ever going to see it type thing. Does that make sense?
That totally makes sense. You have to be comfortable with just waiting for the culmination of all of your experiences to birth something to be the role model.
Exactly.
Yeah, makes
and
sense.
It's fascinating just watching, the 50th birthday roll around for line sixes and just like all of a sudden they're just so much more magnetic than they've ever been. It's really cool to watch.
If you're enjoying this episode, please consider sharing it with at least one friend or family member who you think could benefit from hearing it. You help us grow and reach more people by sharing it with those around you. Also, be sure to head to the show notes to check out our membership offerings, membership marketplace, and more. In nearly all cases with modern health systems, you're waiting months for appointments only to spend a mere 10 minutes with a doctor who quickly hands out a generic diagnosis that is likely rooted in a total misunderstanding of health and causes, and then you're offered a one-size-fits-all medication or invasive treatments with unpleasant side effects. If this sounds all too familiar, consider a different approach with the New Biology Clinic, founded by Dr. Tom Cowan, a respected natural health doctor, author, and speaker. Dr. Cowan's holistic perspective on health and wellness and a deep understanding of the true nature of health and disease sets this clinic apart. With the New Biology Clinic, it's not about quick fixes and suppressing symptoms. The practitioners take time to understand your unique story, recognizing that health is unique to the individual and that illnesses have a variety of causes, physically and metaphysically. Members of the New Biology Clinic enjoy a flat monthly fee that includes a range of valuable services like health consults as needed, practitioner-led live streams on diverse health topics, access to a members-only resource library, and multiple live group sessions every month. These sessions cover fitness, breathing integration, biofield tuning, guided meditation, EFT tapping, and much more. Unlike traditional healthcare systems that thrive on frequent visits, prescriptions, treatments, and suppressing symptoms, the New Biology Clinic's motivation is to make you healthy and keep you that way. Visit newbiologyclinic.com to learn more and use code THEWAYFORWARD for $50 off your account activation. If you're a member of The Way Forward, email hello@thewayforward.com to receive $150 off your account activation. Your journey to genuine healing begins here. If you're listening to or watching the show, chances are you probably look out at the state of the world and think, I know there is a much better way of doing things. So many of us have a vision of living off-grid with like-minded people, unschooling kids together, building community together, trading and bartering together, growing food together, and sourcing clean, spring-fed water together. And with modern society headed towards the cliff of tyranny and the centralization of power, it's important to consider a life where we can thrive irrespective of what happens with the rest of society. Most of us know what we want and why we want it, but few have cracked the code on how to achieve it. Our friend Jonathan England has cracked the code on the how. On August 3rd, he is hosting the Off-Grid Dream Life event, where he'll show you the four steps to transform your vision of an idyllic eco-village into a reality. Imagine being a part of a sovereign community with its own food, water, shelter, energy, currency system possibly, allowing you to live in harmony with nature and with each other. No more bills, fresh clean water right out of the ground, organic food picked off the land daily, and surrounded with like-minded people who share your values. If this sounds like your dream, please register for this free virtual event by visiting offgriddreamlife.com or just head to the link in the show notes to learn more.
Okay, so we've talked about the profiles and the line numbers, and now another big component of human design is what your authority is. So I'm a splenic authority, and for me, that means I get this like instant knowing inside of me. And especially, you know, as I've relayed to you, or you relayed to me rather, with respect to my chart, because I have an undefined top portion of my head, other people's thoughts can sort of crowd in. And if I allow those to confuse me, then I don't remember what my initial gut instinct was. And then I'm already messed up. So I really have to clue into that initial gut reaction on a decision. And that resonates with me so deeply. So let's talk about authority.
Yeah, cool. So authority, the two most important things with human design, like number one, this thing is really complicated, all right? But the two things, if you can work them out, is your strategy and authority. Now, we've talked about strategy through type, and this next piece is authority. So authority is all about your internal guidance system. This is the part of you that's going to tell you what is correct for you and what is not correct for you. So it's not in alignment with type. And we start with this kind of like this hierarchy. And if you're looking at your chart and the triangle on the far right-hand side is colored in, then you're an emotional authority, all right? Now, this is almost 50% of the global population, and it often gets referred to as we are two completely different types of people, the emotional versus the non-emotional. So the emotional, I'm an emotional authority. What that means is that I have to make especially big decisions over time. Like I need to sleep on it. And in a world where we are forced, we are so heavily conditioned to make decisions in the moment, you know, make as many decisions as you can every day. Like that is so bad for an emotional authority. And the reason why is this is also what we call, just trying to remember the name of it. It is an awareness center. So what that means is that it has a depth of awareness that sits in there that literally not only is it telling me over time, like if I have an initial yes to something, if it's still a yes the next day, great, that's emotional clarity. Great, that's a yes. But it also has this awareness, this depth of awareness that sometimes because I've got a defined sacral, it might be going, yeah, we've got energy for this. But my emotional authority is like, because it's waiting for the correct time. And if I take the correct time, then I take the shorter path. If I let my mind jump in and override, which most of us do, then I'm going to take the long road, you know, the path I think I should take as opposed to, you know, maybe the quantum path, which is much quicker. So emotional authority, we talk about finding the emotional clarity. If you have emotional authority, you're always in a mechanical wave. So it never goes away, no matter how much work you do on yourself. Like, trust me, I've tried. But it's about really understanding that when you're in an emotional low, that's okay. It's just part of your process. You know, give it a better meaning. When you're in an emotional high, lucky you, enjoy it, but don't make decisions up there. And then when it all comes back into the middle, that's the time to make the best big decisions in your life.
And to indicate how much you believe in what you're talking about here, you've literally, correct me if I'm wrong, restructured parts of your business around this with what you were calling green light, red light decision making.
Yeah. So one of the big things with me is I do not make decisions in the moment. Whereas Taylor, she's a sacral authority, which I'll talk about in a minute. Like it's bang in the minute. So what's happening is I'm becoming a bottleneck, right? Because my emotional authority needs time. So I'm either making poor decisions because I'm overriding my authority, or, you know, I'm not making a decision. So what we did in the business is we created like Mondays, like the green light. So every decision that needs to be made in that week happened, like I am aware of it on a Monday. So by Friday, there can be a decision made.
You've gone through the emotional waves. So you're like, okay, now I know which decision.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, like inner authority is exactly that. We are so conditioned from the moment we're born to give our power away, to think that there is an authority greater than us outside of us. And it's just not true. You know, for me personally, for my family, for my kids, like my kids have been told your gut is everything because they're both sacral authorities. You trust your gut. If I tell you to do something and your gut says it's a hard no, then it's a hard no. Because at the end of the day, we all need to trust this authority that sits within us. So that's emotional authority. Then we have sacral authority. This is also, you're also going to be a generator if you have sacral authority. And it's a yes or no. Okay. So it's not detailed. It's just, I have energy for this, or I don't have energy for this. And it's literally engaging the motor or not. So in every moment you're responding. It's this generator respond, respond, respond. So you always see the sacral response in a generator. And it's really interesting because I so often either interview or get interviewed by generator types or manifesting generators. And one of the things that you don't do a lot is nod. Like you did just nod then, but you don't actually nod a lot because you're not a sacral being. So you can see with sacrals, you're constantly going like this. And what was hilarious was when I was sitting in your aura doing your chart, you were like, your head was about to drop. And I'm like, there it is. Like that's my sacral. You're actually amplifying the energy of my sacral. It's turning yours on and you're going, yep, 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 yep. Mm-hmm. That's the sacral energy. So if you've got a sacral authority, you've got to be so good at, yes, I've got energy for this, or no, I don't. Because it's the easiest, it's the simplest authority. The greatest challenge is that the mind instantly jumps in and overrides because we've been taught to think about it. And your sacral response, you do not think about it, never. You just, yes, I do, no, I don't. Then we move to splenic authority. So splenic authority, again, is it's an in the moment, it's spontaneous, it's out of the blue. Some of the examples that I love to share with people is, you know, like I was walking down the road one day and a bush turkey gave me a fright. Now, we have them everywhere in Byron Bay. It's not a thing. And I was really curious. And before I could turn to the person I was with and say, what was that all about? There is this huge, I would say like 8-foot python in front of me. That's that splenic response. Like the whole body is responding to something. I didn't know why or what, or like my subconscious mind, my brain is so in the back seat. It's got no idea, but that is a splenic hit.
So are you splenic?
No, but I was in the aura of a splenic.
That makes sense.
So I was amplifying that person's splenic response.
Got it. Okay.
The challenge for people that have splenic authority is often it can seem really odd. They might just get like a knowing that they have to do something weird or, yeah.
It's so funny because as you were saying this, even before you said that, just bringing up splenic authority, I'm thinking about like the instantaneous like yes. And so I do this thing where everyone has like weird like, twitches and quirks and things like this. But for me, mine is if I get something that's like an epiphany, I do this thing where I blink a lot and then I'll just like immediately obsess over that thing and go start looking into it. And it's always in a place where it like doesn't make sense for that to happen, or it oftentimes is. And I could imagine someone, a fly on the wall, or even just my wife is like, what the hell?
Yep.
That is so random. Because it's like I get an instant download like and I start blinking a lot that I need to go look into something. And then I just rush to go do it and I have to do it. And I'm obsessing over it for sometimes weeks on end at that point too. And that's splenic authority.
What is so cool is you've actually just spoken so much of your design. So the spleen is the thing, that spontaneous moment that starts the chain of events. But what's actually happening is it's the 43 in your Ajna that's having the, and you even use the word, the city state of the 43 is epiphany.
Wow.
You know, it's actually my core talent. Like, and my ex-husband used to say to me all the time, oh God, here comes another epiphany, like over and over again. So yeah, like you just can't make this stuff up. It's the language that you're using.
Right.
But the thing about the spleen is that it can start very, very subtle. So people feel like they can't feel their intuitive hit. They can't feel that instinct because the spleen is like a basic survival instinct as well. It's the thing that's going to tell you to get off the exit on the freeway because something's about to happen up the road. And it starts really quiet because most of us don't listen to it. We're told, you know, as kids that, you know, our imagination is just that. It's just our imagination. It's not real. And it, so we really downplay it. So if you have splenic authority, it's really important that you listen to the whispers. Mm. And when you act on the whispers, they get louder and louder and louder. But they can be really odd, like just nonsensical. But when you follow them, they all make sense.
Mm. Interesting. And what type of authority was Ra?
I think he was actually a splenic manifester.
I was going to guess that. That's interesting.
Of course.
And you can only have one authority, right?
Yeah, okay. Only one authority.
Okay. And other than the three we've already covered, what other types of authority can be?
So then we move into this authority type that's kind of overarching. It's called a sounding board. So all the next ones I'm going to share with you, it's this process of being able to speak it out. And as you speak out your process, what you're thinking, what you're feeling, dependent on a lot of whatever else is going on in your chart, you're going to hear what you need to hear. Okay. So you have to have someone in your life that you can have a conversation with that isn't going to give you help or guidance or tell you what to do. This is this process of just, okay, so I'm hearing you say this, 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 and this, or I noticed your tone changed when you said that. Like not guidance, just reflecting
that's
back.
That's what my wife has.
Yes. She's a mental projector.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
So when she's soundboarding for you, the process for her is that she's going to be talking out what's going through her head, through her Ajna, so her thinking process. And this is a thinking process that she's speaking. And then as she's speaking it out, all of a sudden it switches to knowing. That's it. I just heard what I needed.
So it's literally just being able to verbalize it to someone else and even almost just reiterate it exactly back to them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And now like you will see it. Like I watch anyone who has a sounding board, you can almost see it on their face the moment they hear it. You know, you can just say, oh, something just shifted there. But yeah, it's very much about holding space for their process. And sometimes they just, like I've heard a lot of sounding board people, they will just take, you know, send a voice message to someone and go, oh, there it is. Or they'll give advice to someone and go, oh, there it is. That's for me. So first, it's the ego authority. And if you've got ego authority, then you're a manifester or a projector. And if you have an ego authority person in your life, it's really important that you understand that these people talk about and basically view their entire life from how everything affects them.
Interesting.
So it can be really challenging. My mum was a ego projector, and she was also on the scale of narcissism. And that's not to say that all ego projectors or manifestors are narcissists. They're not.
There's just a tendency towards it, possibly.
Yeah. So when you have that person in your life, or when you are that person, number one, you need to give yourself permission to talk about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're not the narcissist, then you're feeling really bad that your process is always about coming back to you.
Got it.
And if you have a defined will center, it's something that I've got a defined will center and I've struggled with. You know, when a lot of the time people tell me something and I'll just run it through my system, like how that would affect me. And I felt bad about that. But it's because I have that energy within me. It's not how I make decisions, but I have that energy within me. And you're going to be talking about how something directly affects you. And then you'll know that's the thing or that's not the thing.
Got it.
Then we move to self-directed projectors, and they're the ones that are going to be talking about, they're soundboarding how they can move towards, like it's a directional conversation about how they can experience more love. And they mightn't use the word love, but the moment we say this to self-directed projectors, they're like, oh my goodness, that's exactly what I'm always, that's my primary focus, like when I'm always making decisions, it's about how am I going to give more or receive more love. So that's the thing they're going to be talking about. And then mental projectors, they're going to be talking about their mental process. You know, when you have mental definition, you think 3, 5, 10 steps ahead of everybody else. You see structure in your mind. Things look clear. Like Taylor has said to me in the past, I've come to her with an idea. I'm like, right, this is the thing that I want to do. And she will literally say to me, oh, that's crazy. I just came up with the structure we need to build that in my head. I hadn't even inspired her yet she'd built it in her head. It was just being built in the background. So the mental projector, they're going to be talking about all these mental things, and then all of a sudden the mental thinking and structure turns into knowing. And once that knowing hits, that's their decision.
So would they be consider themselves oftentimes like highly intuitive then?
Well, all the undefined centers. So if you are a even an ego, a self-directed or a mental, you have no definition in the bottom of the chart at all. And for a mental projector, they have nothing below the throat, especially if their throat's not defined.
So they're literally just picking up on the energy of exactly. other people and other things and other situations. Exactly. I mean, it makes sense because my wife is the most intuitive person that I know personally. Yeah. And it's like scary intuitive.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she probably also has the 57 somewhere important as well.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see. And that actually brings up my next question, the numbers. So you said the 43, and I saw on my chart all of these like very specific numbers across mm-hmm. it. What are all of those?
So the numbers, they correlate back to the I Ching.
Okay.
And we call them the gates. So if we have a center, we call them centers, they're the chakras. On each center, there's a bunch of numbers. They're called gates. When one gate reaches to another gate in another chakra and fills in that whole line, that's called a channel.
Got it.
Okay.
Okay.
So when the gates—
Is that where there's literally like defined colors between each channel?
Exactly. Okay, and that when it's sense. A full channel, so it goes from one center to the next, that energy is moving back and forward from both those centers.
Got it.
Okay. And then when this in the centers, if the gate is just lit up and the center's colored in, then that energy is just on all the time.
Mm.
Okay. But then if you have a white or an undefined center, and the gate's activated, so you see that the little number and a little line that comes out from there, that means it's sitting at an amber light. So it's going to be your expression of that theme, but it has to be plugged in first before it actually is expressed in you.
From there, the other major piece we have is the incarnation cross.
Yes.
What's that?
So your incarnation cross, Ra called it the job description of your aura. And he almost didn't release it. And it's lucky because Ra didn't last a lot longer. I think he lasted another 15 years, 20 years maybe, not even that. He almost didn't release the information because he was like, well, the mind will get so caught up in all the things you're meant to do because this is what your incarnation cross says. But it's just the job of your aura. Now, it will also, you will notice that it shows up in all the work that you do. It shows up in the relationships that you have because it's the biggest energies that you express. But it is actually this job of your aura. So it brings together four of the gates. So it's the personality sun, earth, followed by the design sun, earth. So if you're looking at your chart, the top two right on the top two on the right are the first one and two number, and then the top two on the left are the number three and four. And that makes up your incarnation cross. Now, when those four energies come together, they literally, it's how you help and serve, basically. You can be sitting on the train and your incarnation cross is doing the job and you have no idea.
By being there because it's in your field, it's in your aura.
Exactly. You know, the example I love to use are my kids. You know, when my first son was born, he's a cross of the Sleeping Phoenix. And the Sleeping Phoenix, and we're just about to move into the new paradigm in 2027, and we're moving into the Sleeping Phoenix. Like, it's, you can't make this stuff up. So it's a time of us rising from the ashes, right? Yeah. He was born, and that was the point where my mental health took a massive leap forward in improvement. He didn't do anything. He was just a newborn baby. In fact, I was exhausted most of the time, but his energy is what I needed to rise from the ashes. Then when my second son was born, he's a cross of the Sphinx, and that's all about finding a new direction. When I was pregnant with him, I remember having this really big conversation with a friend of mine who was an entrepreneur, and I was just like, I cannot go back into advertising. I have to do something else. And I decided when I was pregnant with him, I'm like, I'm just going to start a business. I don't know what it is. 3 months after he was born, I started a business. Now, a Sphinx is all about new direction. So he didn't have to do anything, but him being born, that energy being born into my life was like, boom.
Is that energy then amplified for people who are around those with specific incarnation cross because they're undefined as well?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. So did you find that he amplified you in places that you were undefined?
Yeah. Wow. So especially my second child, because all of his incarnation cross gates sit in the G center and I've got a wide open G center. So he literally gave me the energy of direction.
Wow.
So whenever he was around he was always around me when I was creating my first business, he was never too far away. Like it would be rare that we were out of aura. So he was literally giving me the energy. I had no idea at the time.
And I'd imagine that it also depends on whether that person is operating from their true self or what's it called again?
So either in alignment or in your not self.
Yeah,
so
not self. Self or, yeah,
okay. Yeah, if you're in your not self, that means you're operating from your conditioning.
Right. So if, let's say, you're undefined in a certain spot and that person around you is very defined in that spot, if they're operating from their not self, their shadow side in that spot, you, if you're unaware of that, or maybe even if you are aware of that, you're going to be impacted by it to some degree. I'd imagine if 100%. You're aware, you're not going to be as impacted because you realize, okay, this is not me.
Yeah, 100%. You know, like when, I can't remember who it was, you know, one of the original performance greats came up with, you are the average of the five people that you surround yourself with. Like literally from a human design perspective, anyone, the definition that you're surrounded by that fills in your non-defined centers is conditioning you. Like it's directly conditioning you. So I've got an undefined head in Ajna, right? So yep, I'm a very open thinker. I can put random things together. But if I'm in the environment of a what I would call an unresourceful thinker for a long period of time, then I'm going to get conditioned by that. I've got an undefined spleen. I cannot be in hospitals. I feel so uncomfortable in hospitals. And again, undefined spleen. Whereas for you, you could probably be in a hospital and be quite fine about it.
These days, I still don't like hospitals.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
But yes, in general, I don't think I would freak out that much being in hospitals. The other question that I had related to, because human design is helping people get back to their inner authority, right? And you brought up conditioning a number of times, and I think I already know the answer to this, but how do you know whether you're operating within your inner authority versus your conditioning? Because I would imagine that's something that comes up quite a bit within the construct of human design.
Yeah. So it's all about the experiment. Okay. So human design was birthed into the world as an experiment, not a dogma.
I love that so much because I hate dogma.
Oh my goodness, me too. Yeah, and so many people are teaching it as a dogma. In fact, Jovian, that Ra created, teaches it so often as a dogma. So many people get really attached to, but Ra said this. Ra said what, like everything he delivered was through the filter of his personality.
Right?
We have the voice said, and Ra said, this is an experiment. Don't listen to me. Don't listen to the knowledge. Take it, experiment with it, work out what works for you and what doesn't, let it go.
Wow. Amazing.
So that's like the most important thing is that it's an experiment. So when we are, when we're really trying to decide what is correct for us, when we're understanding if we're operating from our internal authority or our mind, it's all about the experiment. Okay, so I'm an emotional authority. So the first thing I would experiment with is just slowing down. You know, I'm a manifesting generator. So the first thing I'm experimenting with is I'm not initiating anymore. I'm responding. And as you start to experiment just with these simple things, you can feel your own internal guidance system, the volume just turning up. And then, you know, I've shared the not self theme. So as soon as I feel frustrated, whoa, I'm in my head, I'm out of alignment, I'm probably in my conditioning. So we have all these indicators that help us with the experiment. I mean, Ra talked about like it takes 7 years to decondition. You know, that was something that he was told, that if we just follow our strategy and authority, within 7 years, we will clear out all of our conditioning. Now, for me, being a manifesting generator, I'm like, screw 7 years. I'm like, let's get straight to it. You know, I'm also a behavioral coach. I get the subconscious mind. Let's put all of this together. But that's the whole point. Like at the end of the day, how do you know when you're not listening to your gut? Well, you have to take responsibility. You have to empower yourself and go, you know what? Because we all know when we have not listened to our gut. We all know when we haven't listened to that inner
truth. And then you can't blame other people when you learn human design because it's like you're learning where you allowed that situation to happen or you didn't go with your inner authority.
Exactly.
I love that because I'm so big on not blaming other people for our circumstances right now. Like so, it's
really
such
agree.
An important thing.
And yeah. But I think, you know, for me, my... I was talking about this the other day. Like, I think one of my number one values, but also the thing that I've learned that is the most important thing we can do as humans is just take full responsibility for our lives, like for ourselves. You know, because I'm a line three, I make a lot of mistakes and I don't believe in mistakes. You're winning or learning in my world. And at the end of the day, like, when I take full responsibility for me, then I get to choose winning or learning instead of failure. You know, when I make decisions that are in alignment with me, then I get to reap the benefits. But when I allow my conditioning and my fear and my ego to override, then I reap the benefits.
Right.
So it's all about, you know, running the experiment, really discovering, like, if you are a splenic authority, like listening to it, what does it mean? What does it feel like? What shows up? What's happening in my external reality? Like run the experiment and then what works, do more of that. And what doesn't work, do less of that.
Yeah. I mean, it's that simple.
Yeah.
It makes so much sense. I had another question related to astrology.
Mm-hmm.
How do the celestial bodies play into human design specifically?
Yeah. So, like in astrology, they're fundamental because the thing, and this is crazy because I mean, I've studied astrology from sort of in depth a few times and for some reason it just doesn't stick with me. It just doesn't. I don't know why. I'm not knocking it. It just doesn't give me the specificity that I enjoy. But both astrology and human design, like no one talked to me before human design about these freaking neutrinos. Like the neutrinos are these subatomic particles. They're not, and when Ra talked about them, they were just an idea. They were just something scientists spoke about. He had no idea what they were, but it was confirmed that way. And then they were actually, these quantum particles were discovered. They study them. I think they're spending like billions of dollars in Japan studying these things, neutrinos, right? What do? they move through everything. Like right now they're moving through us, they're moving through the water bottle, but they also move through all the celestial bodies. And as they do that, they pick up pieces. And then as they move through you simultaneously, they leave pieces within you. Mm. So that's how we actually get this reading and this accuracy. Then within our human design chart, each planet is also going to be attributed to a gate. So a certain, and I'm going to bring in a bit of the gene keys here, like one of the ones that my absolute go-to, like if there's, as a enthusiastic child, the thing I want to see in everyone's chart is their core talent, right? And that is our design Mars, right? So it's got a little number in there and yours is a 63 and it's the gate of doubt and it's this, your core talent is actually going like, this pattern isn't going to work. This thing is not going to work.
I mentioned this outside, but I just want to reiterate it for this podcast. I know people who listen to this podcast pretty often are familiar with me saying falsification doesn't require replacement. A lot of what I do is point to the things that clearly aren't. And me pointing to what clearly isn't does not necessitate that I know what is. But like I've said before, I'm all about being open with childlike curiosity, trying to figure out what is, being on this never-ending pursuit of what is true while falsifying and pointing to all the things that, nope, that's clearly not true. Nope, that's clearly not true. That's literally like what I do. And yeah. When you said that to me, that was one of many moments where I was just laughing because I'm like, yeah, that's literally what I do.
Yeah, yeah. And like in your incarnation cross, you've got the 61. And the 61 is, it's all about the mysteries of the universe and discovering the truth, you know? Like this is the thing that drives your work in
literally,
the world.
It's what drives me. Yeah. It's crazy.
So each gate then will fall, that will have a planet that's associated with it as well. And that gives it, you know, different themes. They can be all sorts of different things. And we have the, I also often refer to the nodes, so the south node and the north node. And this is like this pathway that we walk. And I teach a lot around business because, you know, creating this business, breaking all of the rules, just basically being authentically me. One of the things that we teach a lot is this pathway, and it's from the south node to the north node. And when we understand the pathway that we're walking in the world, then we know that's what we're going to be that's what people are attracted to because they're attracted to what we're putting out, like what we're learning. So we can look at the gates and the planets together and they just kind of, the thing about human design, it just puts layer upon layer upon layer or goes deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into really deep specificity.
What I love about what you just said about how these celestial bodies are sort of imbuing themselves within us is a really good friend of mine, Eileen McCusick. She does biofield tuning. And just recently she started doing or just exploring chart tuning. So actually taking your zodiac and imprinting it, not even imprinting it, but finding it with the tuning fork, like the celestial bodies popping up in your biofield exactly where they are based on taking your chart and overlaying it over your biofield. Yeah. It's incredible. And she'll literally like find those celestial bodies in your chart. And it just, for me, as someone who is like, you know, astrology, like, yeah, I totally get that the sun, moon, stars, the celestial bodies have an impact on our life. But that just made it more real for me. Yeah. When Eileen started doing that, I was like, oh my God, they literally imprint upon us. So just relates exactly to what you're saying.
And I love what you just said because I've listened to that episode and Amanda was like, you have to listen to this. I'm like, I've listened to the episode. It's amazing. And we want to talk to her about, because we think that she will be able to pick up in the biofield the difference between a defined center and an undefined center. Yeah. And then the power of that would be epic because if we gather the most of our conditioning in an undefined center, and these are the places, like for me, I've got an undefined spleen, so I've had to build the muscle of fear, like moving through fear. But what if I could tune my biofield and specifically focus on that splenic energy and like clear that stuff out? I would like get to where I want to go so much quicker. I wouldn't have had to clear all the stuff out.
I'll link you guys up. Yeah. You have to. Yeah. I'm always thinking about how all these people that I interview, how all of it fits together. And of course that's what I do. Cause that's like the nature of what I'm supposed to do. Yeah. So, The other thing that I want to talk about, and you mentioned it a little bit earlier, is this new paradigm mm-hmm. that we're moving into in 2027. Yep. And it's what's fascinating about that, and the year is maybe off a little bit. There's people like Jason Brashears, Archaics, who talks about us coming up on the end of this next cycle of humanity based on the simulacrum, as he calls it. And then there's the Kali Yuga. And if the dates are accurate, people are saying that that's sort of coming to an end in roughly 2040. Some people say 2025. So I don't know. The jury's kind of out on that one. But it's interesting because all of these systems seem to be talking about some, you know, 10-year plus or minus time period around right now of either a totally total shift in it into a new paradigm or an old paradigm falling or both. I don't really know. So yeah, let's talk about this 2027 new paradigm.
I think this is fascinating because yes, it's everywhere. Everyone's talking about this block of time and I keep being told about something different, you know, another methodology or another spiritual teaching. So in human design, we talk about we are in a certain era, okay, or paradigm. And at the moment, we're being governed by an incarnation cross that's called the Cross of Planning. It's actually my incarnation cross, which I think is crazy because I'm a Cross of Planning and my eldest son is a Cross of the Sleeping Phoenix, which is what we're moving into.
And you're the human design lady.
Yeah. And it's and what's really interesting is that, so what we're in now, so the Cross of Planning, this is basically, there's energies of man, woman, marriage. There's a lot of like patriarchy. There's a lot, it's the everything from the Industrial Revolution. It's the growth. It's being able to extend human life. There is so many things. It's about focusing on a dream. It's about building lots of different skills. It's a very tribal energy about the family. Now, all of that built us to where we are today. But it's specifically all of those things that are now crumbling. They're all the things that are breaking down because it's like they did what they needed to do, but now they don't work anymore. And we're moving into this new paradigm, which is this Cross of the Sleeping Phoenix, which is all about rising from the ashes. And the energies that we're going into are things like sex and money, so intimacy. So what are we seeing in the world right now? That the whole definition of the old, the two gates, the 40 and the 37, man, woman, get married, have family, you know, that model, that's falling apart. Wow. Because we're moving into this new time of intimacy where intimacy is not about procreation. It's not about making babies. It's actually about having an intimate connection. Some people that will mean sex. Some people that will mean conversation. Some people that will mean who knows what it means. So for me, I feel like that's a lot of evidence of where we're seeing the breakdown of, you know, sexual identity because it's not about making babies anymore. We're moving into this new time of like just being more authentically ourselves.
And do you think it's because we're in this sort of transition phase in between that, that a lot of confused paradigms will come out of that, that then nefarious powers will latch onto and amplify the negative aspects of that?
100%. 100%.
Yeah.
And I think,
so I think about like a phoenix rising from the ashes. We're in the phase where things are crumbling to ash still. So it's like as things start to come out of that, the parasitic class, if you will take pieces of that and try to amplify those in a very nefarious way.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things that, I mean, one of the books that completely changed my life is Power versus Force, right? And the reason why is because the fundamental understanding of force is unsustainable, right? So what we're seeing right now is the unsustainable application of force.
That's like literally government.
Right, exactly, right?
That's what I talk about a lot.
Yeah, right.
It is literally rule by force.
Right.
Yeah.
But power, and interestingly for me in my design, in my North Node, I have the power of the great. And the power of the great is all about self-empowerment.
Wow.
It's also part of the new paradigm.
Yeah.
So although I have this incarnation cross of the old, my path has two of the new paradigm gates.
Wow.
And it's a thing that I'm here not only to walk my own path, but to teach others. So we're moving into a very individualistic time, which from our old conditioning, that's like, oh, my God, that's terrible. We'll all think of ourselves. No, 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 no. We're going to move into a time where we no longer fear upsetting others or not being who we need to be. We're actually going to step into the truth of who we are. We've got the gate 55, which is all about freedom. It's the gate of abundance. Mm. And it's my greatest teacher of abundance. And trust me, I've done everything there is to do on abundance. But the 55, what it teaches us is that true abundance is an abundance of spirit. It is authenticity. And so that's what we're moving into. We're also moving into a time of self-empowerment, the power of the great, the power within. And the cool thing about this 34 energy is all of us that have it, it's like we can feel it pulse through our veins. And all I want to do is give it to everybody, but we can't. We cannot physically teach other people to have this energy. We can't give it to them either.
Yet we just have to embody it.
Exactly. Well, we just have to be it. Exactly. Right. We have to embody it and be it. But we're moving into a paradigm where it's going to be basically the background filter for everybody.
That makes sense. Especially on the authenticity piece, right? Because I see so many examples, even in my own life, for all my friends who are, you know, to some degree, some smaller than the others, some larger than the others, dealing with some pieces of an identity crisis where they're in situations where they're not able to fully express their authenticity.
Yeah.
And like, that's the most important thing right now.
Yeah.
And also interesting, Eileen, not to talk about Eileen again, but
I
do like every episode I talk about Eileen, but she brought up on a post on Facebook that the most important frequency to embody, and I think she was kind of contrasting it against the David Hawkins scale, was authenticity, according to her. She's like, that is the most important thing to embody right now is authenticity.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that even from a marketing perspective, you know, we've had so many years of people teaching this old influence model and no one wants to hear it anymore. What do they want? Like, what do I attribute my success to? I am authentic. You know, the thing I hear the most from people who are either in my community or listen to my podcast, and when they meet me in person, they're like, wow, you are just the same human. I'm like, yeah, that's
so
the
dope
thing, right?
Yeah.
But I've taken years I've rewired my brain. I've healed my conditioning. I've healed my trauma. I've done all of these things. But we are moving into a time where we're going to have governing bodies of energy that are helping us do this in a lot more effortless way. Like I've done in the line 3 way. I've done it the hard way. I've been, you know, crawling on my hands and knees at times till I got to a point that I was like, I just can't be bothered trying to be anyone other than myself. And it doesn't get me anywhere. And I feel awful. And what would my kids think? And now it's just second nature. And for me personally, I think this is the gift of human design. Mm. Because the one thing human design will not do is tell you something you don't know about yourself. Mm. It is just going to give you a permission slip. It's going to give you the language of what you feel on the inside. And as we move to this new paradigm, you are going to be supported with these governing energies. It's abundance, it's intimacy, it's power of the great, this self-empowerment. And the last one is the power of now. You know, so we are going to be governed by this ability. So we're so stuck in the mind in this era, you know, like the mind, the brain is king. Human design says that is wrong. It is our subconscious mind and our brain. It is incredible. Like it is amazing the things that thing can do. However, it's got to get out of the driver's seat.
Mm.
You know, it's our internal guidance system. It's our intuition. It's our authority that needs to be driving. And then it, you know, I like to think of, because behavioral coaching is my thing, I like to think that what we want to do is we want to clear up everything getting in the way, and then we can rewire or we can recondition our subconscious brain just to completely support our design, which is what I've done over the years. So I couldn't even not be me. Like my identity, like I don't have the identity pieces that I used to have. Like I separated from my husband last year, but I never think like I'm single. That's not a word I'd ever use because I'm so aware of identity. I'm more about this authentic truth of this human that I came into being, just be my design every day. And I feel like we are moving to a time where not only do we have this tool to do day to day, but we're also moving to a new paradigm that's really going to support that, even for those that never come across human design.
You know, it's so interesting about you bringing up the present moment being a key part of this is, I think, again, because it appears to be a chaotic and tumultuous time. And I want to emphasize appears because I think a lot of that is narratives that are driven that then the masses accept and then all focus on and create an egregore around. It's like we're really doing the bidding of the parasitic class that wants to amplify all these negative things by all collectively focusing on it. And that's the point I'm trying to make here, is that when you hone into the present moment, here right now, for the overwhelming majority of people just sitting in the present, tuning out all of the black boxes in our home, the computer, the TVs, the iPads, et cetera, and just being with yourself, especially out in nature, you realize everything is mostly okay. And when you're able to do that consistently, you can help birth something new that makes that old paradigm obsolete, that Buckminster Fuller quote. And I think that the more people can exercise that, the more that will help this phoenix that's rising from the ashes rise up and birth something really beautiful. Yeah. And it's just so interesting that that's like a key tenet of this, because I think about that often as it relates to what's going on in the world. And the more we can do that with each other in community, the more that power amplifies.
Yeah.
It's like what, again, Eileen talks about with these concentric rings of biofields of people who are operating in that energy coming together, making larger rings and strong coherent fields overtake and entrain weak incoherent fields. And that's what it sounds like human design is indicating is coming for those who choose to adopt this philosophy.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, everything that you said, and I think the thing that really comes up to me is like we just don't realize how powerful we are.
Mm-hmm.
Like there is so much power within us, and our focus is the most powerful thing we have. Like, what are you putting your attention on? Because this is following your focus, you know? And that present moment piece, I remember learning there's no fear in the moment. Fear is just a mental construct. It's either in the future or in the past. It's something we're worried is going to happen or something that did happen. But when we're in the moment, even in the darkest moment, even in the biggest challenge, we might feel terror, but we are present. We're not like fear. It's not fear that we are taught to have as a like in our minds constantly. It's whatever we need in the moment to deal with that moment. It's just a mental construct. And I think that as we move into the new paradigm, the other piece and the thing that, you know, I genuinely believe there are so many people not wanting us to realize is that if we are moving into a time of this gate 20, this gate of the now, the other thing that this is all about is connection to source. It's this connection to wisdom. And I think that's the piece that we're getting so close to this time that there's no way we won't be able to all be connected into source all the time. The more we can do it now, the more we can share these examples or these methodologies or whatever it is. Like, I don't believe there is one thing. I believe that whatever we need to get us there is important. But for me, like, that 20 is going to be a massive player because it indicates there's going to be an overarching energy. And we can see the influence these four gates have had for the last 400 years that is literally keeping us connected to source in the present moment.
Mm. Beautiful. So beautiful. There's two other things that I want to cover briefly. And one is, and I've not come across someone like this, but I'm sure you have at this point, where you show them their chart and they're like, yeah, none of that resonates.
Mm-hmm.
What is your message to people who say that?
So my message is, please stop sending me your husbands and friends. Like, because I've only ever heard it probably three times, and the three times it's because someone else has initiated it for them. So let's
say they have to feel a call within them to
100%.
Come do this.
Yeah. And this also goes back to all my behavioral profiling. You know, like, I was the person that walked into the large corporate business, into the boardroom of crossed arms of people like, you can't show me, da da da, I don't want a bar of it. And then, you know, by the, you know, give me 20 minutes, half an hour, everyone's like, wow, this stuff's great. But let's say you love this. You're listening to this podcast. You're like, oh, I absolutely want to dive in. Maybe you're someone who knows a lot about human design and you just want your husband or girlfriend to get on the train. Don't do it. All I encourage you to do is focus on your journey, because what's going to change other people's minds is your life. What changes in your life, how life gets. My kids are fascinated by their design because they've seen how it's changed my life, not because I've tried to give it to them or get them on board. So, you know, if someone says to me it doesn't resonate, I know one of two things is going on. One, they didn't initiate, so they're there because someone else has said you should be there and they never wanted to be there. Or two, they're just showing me everything that they resist in themselves. Because ultimately what we resist in our design, I have come to learn, is exactly what you're resisting in yourself. Like the things, when I first learned about it, you know, my husband told me, my ex-husband, he was a projector, or he still is a projector. And I was like, oh, I want to be a projector. I don't want to be a manifesting generator, because I was resisting. Like, I learned very young that I'm too much. So I just kept myself super small. And I, you know, I also had all this conditioning around feeling like I was dumb and I was stupid. So I wanted to be the one that, you know, projectors are often aligned to intellect. So I was just resisting the truth of me. So when I took on, like, okay, I'm just going to experiment, doesn't mean anything. You know, maybe it won't resonate. And once I just let down the barriers and I was just like, I'm just going to experiment, then I was like, this is absolutely me.
Makes sense. Yeah. I could totally see where it's this like avoidance, because it's mirroring back to you parts of yourself that you don't want to own.
Yeah.
And I got to say again, for me, in that hour long reading that I had with you of my chart, I was just like, oh my goodness, this is incredibly spot on. Yeah, it blew me away. The other thing that I wanted to talk about that we forgot to revisit earlier, I forgot to, was related to the group charts. What's the name for that again?
Penta. So up to penta. Five people, it's a okay. Penta.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And is that something that you offer as well on your website?
So we don't do that on my website. You can look it up. It's called BG5. It's like the business arm of Human Design.
Got it.
And then they look at teams and then bigger groups as well. We do that just for individuals and the people that we work with. But if you want to dive super deep and look at all the different models, then the BG5 is the way to go.
Got it.
My biggest, like, and I'm just saying this with a little bit of a caveat, because I feel like a lot of the BG5 stuff is super powerful. And then a lot of it is also just kind of putting people in little boxes, like, because you have this energy, you can only do this as a part of the Penta. And for me personally, I don't love that, but it's most of it's super powerful.
So do you find that it's best for, in group dynamics, people to be aware of the individual charts of those around them more so than the Penta itself as this like aggregate group individuated chart?
Well, I think both is good. Mm-hmm. Like if you put, I mean, so we, let's say we were looking at your team. We will put all your team into the software that we use and we'll look at the Penta and we'll work through and we'll be able to see from a Penta perspective which specific gates each one of you contribute and how you contribute to the Penta. And, I mean, we use it in our work. Like for me, for example, I only have one contribution to a Penta. So I'm actually designed to be the leader external of the group.
Wow.
So I'm not meant to be in the group. The only thing I bring is the culture. And so within my whole business and my community, like my community is known for being exceptional. And why are they exceptional? Because they're people who take responsibility, they take action, da 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 da. Like, and it's all the culture that I've set.
You know what we learn in the military?
What?
The sign of a good leader is that it can operate totally without your whole business, your whole structure can operate totally without you after you've set the culture.
Yeah. That is crazy.
I'm not even kidding. That's what we learned.
That is crazy. And that's exactly how my energy is designed.
Yeah.
So, you know, once I sort of realized really quickly that Taylor would actually be able to do all of that stuff. So she does a lot of that work because I'm not designed. So if I get stuck in, like I don't, and even when I was managing teams in advertising, I just don't micromanage. I don't manage people that way. I empower people. Mm. I give them responsibility. Like I even have a method that I teach corporate. It's called the ball of responsibility. And it's all about leaders not taking that ball of responsibility from the people that work in their team. It's about you empower them with the right questions. You do all this so you don't take it. Yet, of course, I teach that because that's also my design. So we can look at all of those pieces. And at the end of the day, you've got to come back to the experiment. does this work? Does it feel good for me? You know, is this the way I want to run my business or does it not? Because if it doesn't, put it down. Don't do it. But for me, in my experience, like it has worked. And I feel like I have a team of exceptional humans that are the experts in my business. We are all have one group mission and we're all doing the parts of it. You know, like
incredible.
That's
the dream when it comes to business. That's incredible. Incredible. So if people who are watching or listening want to, again, get a free chart, they can through your website. Yep. Is there anything else that you're offering?
Yeah. So you can come along to the website, get your free chart. Then when you do that, we actually decipher for you what you're looking for because we can help you just go down the human design road. We can help you in business. So we do a lot through business because we've had all of this success. We actually hired an incredible consultant last year and she kept saying to us, she's like, I have no idea how you guys have made so much money with such a tiny audience. And we're like, strategy and authority, baby, you know, like we're just following our, so we've just built everything from our own design. So we help people do that. So really the best place to go is just go to the website, get your free chart, and then we'll even send you to podcast episodes for whatever your authority is or whatever your type is. The links will send you to the right places.
Awesome. And all that will be in the show notes for those who are watching or listening. This has been such an awesome conversation and you're so down to earth and fun to talk to. And this was great. So thank you for joining me, Emma.
Thank you so much. It's been amazing to be here. I really appreciate it.